Today, I'm so excited to have Erna Stassen in the studio, and she's going to talk a little bit about herself and about her career. Hi, Erna.
Hi, Chris. Hi, it's great to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you. What a treat. So just tell me a little bit about yourself.
Okay, I just came here to talk with Chris, and here I am sitting in the chair and talking about myself. That was not the plan, but I'm going to enjoy it a lot because I am very passionate about what I do, and I'm very passionate about Canada. Originally, I'm from the Netherlands, and that's where I grew up with my family. And I was there until probably in my late 30s. But ever since I was 16 years old, I had this dream that I wanted to live, work, and play in Canada. My mom had a sister who was married to a Canadian soldier. And we visited that family. They started out in Newfoundland. Then they moved to the East Coast in New Brunswick. And then they moved to Ontario. And so I visited the family with my cousins there frequently. And I just loved the Canadian lifestyle. The freedom and all the space. I love the country. And my parents traveled a lot. So I'm very blessed to have seen a lot of the world. And I decided that the Netherlands was just too small for me and too crowded. And I fell in love with Canada. So finally, in 2003, my dream came true. I never gave up. There were lots of hurdles, but I did make it. And I immigrated, and I just loved being in Canada. My whole career that I chose was basically from the perspective I just love helping people. But when I was a kinesiotherapist, it's not really kinesiotherapy. It was something different, but that's not very well known in the world. But I thought, if I become a physiotherapist, I will still be doing what I love doing. But that's something that might be beneficial for me when I move to Canada. So everything, if I look back to my life, everything that I did led up to the fact that I finally made my dream come true, which is so interesting. And you don't know that when you're on the other end, right? When you're at the beginning and you look at your life, oh, I dream of going to Canada. And then you don't know how it's going to be. All I knew is that that's how it was going to be. But how I was going to get there, I had no clue. But years later, I did it. And looking back at all the steps that I had to take and all the people that I met on the way and all the things that I learned on the way, I just feel really blessed and rich and abundant with all the things that I've learned and experienced. So basically what that taught me was people often think things go wrong in their life or they have obstacles and they think they can't overcome them. And so you look at it as this big, big mountain. But what I've come to realize is that everything that happened in my life, the good things and the not so great things and the terrible things, they all helped me get where I am now, which is so powerful because now when something happens and I go, oh no, I can't do this because this happened, the obstacles in my life are no longer an obstacle, they're an opportunity. And I realize that now. So I've learned so very much.
I guess a question I might have is, what would it have been like to come from the Netherlands to Canada? Like, did you feel isolated at first? You would have had English language, obviously, but
yes.
Did it feel kind of isolating at first because you didn't know people and your culture was so different?
The culture is not that much different. It's the Western culture. You'd be surprised. It's more in the little things, not in the big things. One example is in the Netherlands, when you're invited for dinner, you bring flowers and then have dinner. And then people tend to really sit at the table and talk forever. And here I realized, you know, you're supposed to bring something. Well, you don't have to, but it's more common that people bring some kind of food or they bring the wine. And then when the dinner is over, that's it. I was always surprised how abruptly the party would end after the dinner was consumed.
Oh, so you're a partier. That's good to know.
Not really. Not in the way the Canadians see partying.
Yeah.
Yes, of course I am a partier.
That's neat because our family is like that. We love to talk. I think that's why I like doing talk radio is because there's so much to talk about, right?
Yes. But the thing that why I came to Canada was because I loved the mountains and the outdoor activities, the freedom, the air, just being able to play. For me, it was one big playground, basically. Yeah, mountain biking, cross-country skiing, hiking, camping, yeah.
Okay, so you moved to Canada, but you were back east first, and did you kind of migrate your way back?
No,
here?
I came straight to BC. I'd never been in BC.
Oh, okay.
But I decided, you know what, I think BC is like paradise.
Oh, yeah.
That would be the optimum place for me to go. So it was 1999, And I just decided, I had a job. I worked as a physiotherapist in a rehabilitation center, and I loved it. It was the perfect job for me. But I still wanted to go to Canada. So I gave up my job. I just bought a ticket to fly to Vancouver. I think it was March 31st. And I just flew to Vancouver. I had no clue what I was going to do, where I was going to stay. I had no plan whatsoever. Just I knew I just want to be there, and then I'll go from there. And I traveled for about 9 months all through Canada, all through the British Columbia and the Yukon and even Alaska. And then when it got cold, I went south again and had an amazing time, just so much to experience. And it strengthened my desire to move here. But it took me another 4 years before I got all the paperwork and all the hurdles, because you can't just move and work as a physiotherapist in a different country. You have to go through all the credentials. So it took me 4 years to get all of the paperwork in order before I could come here and practice as a physiotherapist. And I had to do the physiotherapy exam and get registered, get my credentials.
And what about your citizenship? Did you get that at the same time? Was it 4 years to get your Canadian citizenship, or was that longer?
That was longer. That was my decision. I immigrated, so I was a landed immigrant. That was another hurdle that I took. So I was a landed immigrant. And then in order to get Canadian citizenship, I had to give up my Dutch citizenship. So I kind of lingered a little bit. And then 2 years ago, I got my Canadian citizenship.
Well, they don't want you back there, do they?
Well, I don't want to go back there.
I don't want you to go back there either. We need you here.
I'm here.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yes. What an exercise to get here.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, at least it's not like the old days when my dad came over. It would have been a real slow boat to get her, I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, well, welcome to Canada. Yes. So you're not a newbie anymore.
Not really. No, I've been here for 16 years, I suppose. Yes. Yeah, 16. Yeah.
When you came to Salmon Arm, was it kind of like a lot of people ride into Salmon Arm and they never ride out? This is that kind of place where people just come for a vacation and they don't go away.
The Sushuap is beautiful, but I didn't get here until a couple of years ago. I just thought, why not? How come it took me so long to find this place and realize that it's the perfect place for me to be? So it took me a couple of years to realize that. But I started off in Kamloops. There was a big hospital there, so I started working there as a physiotherapist. So the whole region is very familiar to me. I've been here for all that time. Although I did move to Burns Lake, which is up north, 3.5 hours from Prince George.
So you came to Salmon Arm and you were still doing physiotherapy when you came here, or had you started to switch into what you're doing now?
I lived in Kamloops and I had my own practice. I started my own practice in 2009, and I worked with people. A lot of people had chronic pain and a lot of injuries from car accidents. And so I worked closely with other team members. And one thing that I loved doing was working in the water. There's a hot water pool in Kamloops that I used to do physiotherapy in. That was amazing. And I was in a relationship, and the business part of my business, I didn't have to worry about. But then my partner died in 2003, and I had a major life lesson, and I kind of redefined myself in that moment where, okay, where am I and where is it I really want to go? Am I helping people enough in a way that gives them back their life? And I know that I've always heard the feedback from my patients that I gave them hope and I gave them motivation and I gave them a different perspective. But was it enough? And then I also realized that I wasn't getting any younger. Not that I'm old, but physiotherapy, it's physically and mentally hard work. And you can only see so many patients in a day. And I started thinking about how can I leverage my knowledge and my skills and my abilities that I can help more people without the physical load for myself and help more people in one day instead of just the amount of, you know, one-on-one physiotherapy, you're limited. So that got me into a different career where I thought, well, I could do workshops. I can teach people in groups. I can do much more about education and teach people about what is pain and what is stress and how can they help themselves. And I did lots of courses everywhere, all over the world. And I got involved in a group in the growth industry, the personal development industry. And then I got the opportunity to do a coaching training for high-performance coaching. And I thought, that's it. That's what I want. I want to be a coach. So a light went on for me, a big light bulb moment. And I completely immersed myself in that and learned a lot of things about marketing. I mean, I don't know. I was a physiotherapist. I didn't know what marketing was, especially not online marketing, because that's what I was looking for, is to get with the internet and people being online. That's a huge opportunity for me to reach so many people. And I thought, well, if I can do that, then I could even just be at home with my lovely dogs. I don't have to go out. I don't have to run around and see all these people. I could just be at home and reach all these people and teach them about things that are so important and that I'm so passionate about. So it was a huge learning curve for me. It took me, and I'm still learning, how to do that. How can I reach people? How can I let people know what my message is and how I can help them? So that's where I'm at right now. And I moved from Kamloops to Clearwater and from Clearwater to the Sushvap. So my physical journey is basically from a bigger city. I kind of went to a very small community and returned and kind of went inward and had this journey in different career, dealing with my own emotions. And one of the things that helped me most is to deal with any sadness or grief or even depression, I think, is when you step out of your own comfort zone and ask yourself, what can I do for somebody else? How can I expand myself and serve other people? Not because you don't deserve to look after yourself, but if you're in survival mode, this is what that is. If you're in survival mode, one of the ways to get out of there is to move out of your comfort zone, not hugely, but little steps out of your comfort zone, whether it's going outside and move, learn something new, or do something for somebody else. Those are the things that can help you get out of your own way, basically. And so that's what I did. And it kind of brought me to the Sushvap.
I'm glad it brought you here because I'm getting all this therapy and not paying for a cent of it. And I'm sure our listeners are really enjoying this as well. And you offer a valuable service. So tell us more about how people can get in touch with you.
Well, at the moment, I am in the middle of developing a course. I don't even have a title or a name for it. But basically what it is, it's medicine. It's medicine for people, medicine for the soul, medicine for the heart, and teach people about what health really is and how much more they can do about their own health than they really know. What stress really is and what is underneath their issues, their pain. I believe firmly, and there's science to back that up, that what goes in your mind, what you think about, is actually what creates you. So what you believe makes you. And then you create your belief, you create your life, you create your world based on what you believe. So if you believe that health is not available for you, if health is not there for you because you have an illness and you think that is who you are, then you're not focused on getting better, even though you want to get better, but your belief that you're not. So if you can change your mindset in believing that health is available for you and that your focus is on the things and the actions and the habits that you can start that actually support that. Let me give you an example. If you're a smoker, you see yourself as a smoker, and because you're a smoker, you buy cigarettes and you smoke cigarettes. If you're a non-smoker, there's no way you would buy cigarettes to smoke a cigarette because you're a non-smoker. So if you're a smoker and you want to quit smoker, the fastest way to get out of there is to identify yourself as, I'm a non-smoker. And non-smokers don't buy cigarettes. And non-smokers don't smoke cigarettes. So if you start with that, like if you identify with somebody who doesn't smoke, then you got to step into the shoes of the person that you want to be first to get a different outcome. I am a mindset coach. I work with people's mindset, their beliefs. I'm sort of like a detective to figure out why you're doing what you're doing. What do you believe? And what is it that you really want? And how come you don't have that? So that's always been a passion of me anyway, is behavior. As a physiotherapist, you deal with people's behaviors. How can you help them change and convince them or explain to them that this behavior is better than sitting on the couch and not moving? Because movement is natural to a human being.
And isn't it important for us to realize that it's only our responsibility and our choice that's going to help us make the next step? Because
yes,
you can only coach somebody. You certainly can't get my feet moving unless my feet move.
Yes.
Right? You were talking a little bit about science. Can you talk a little bit about the science of what you're doing as proof as to how that will actually help people?
Well, common belief is that you have pain when you have an injury, which makes sense, right? If you break your leg, it hurts. But then your leg heals. And what if after 6 or 7 months, your legs healed, the bones healed, and you still have pain? Your tissues are healed. There's nothing in your body that is actually causing the pain, but you still have pain. And there's a lot of research on pain and a lot of information. I think they're really great is the Neuro Orthopedic Institute, N-O-I. AI in Australia, and they have a book called Explain Pain. And they're doing a lot of work on the nervous system and how pain is a learned behavior and not necessarily related to tissue damage. In fact, if you would take 100 people off the street and take their x-rays or their a CT scan, you'll find lots of things wrong with their with their spine and their nervous system. And you go, oh, well, this back doesn't look very good. This person is probably in a lot of pain. And that's not the case. There is no correlation between what you can see on an x-ray or a CT scan and the amount of pain that somebody's in. There is no correlation. It doesn't mean anything. So isn't that interesting?
So is it kind of like when you talk about toxic patterns of thinking, say you've had an injured knee for years and you finally get the surgery and your knee, when you look at the x-ray and the doctor says, well, there's nothing wrong with you. Do we keep having pain because of how our brain is thinking? Is that what that is?
Yeah, it's a little bit more complex than that. But in fact, it is learned behavior. When you learn something, there's a neural network that's created. This is why it's very helpful, because you don't have to think about when you tie your shoes. It's just, you don't have to think about driving your car even, right? We all know the example that you're driving somewhere and then you get there, you go, how did I get here? And you can't really remember everything that you did, and because your subconscious mind is basically driving the car. So your cerebellum is where all the automated functions are stored, basically. And that's very helpful, because if you have to get up in the morning and learn how to walk every morning, that's ridiculous. I mean, we know how to walk. We don't have to think about it. But when you get injured, your pain is a protection. It's there to protect you. And sometimes your tissue can get sensitized, because not everybody has chronic pain. But what they've learned is with people with some instances, the nerves get desensitized and the brain has learned pain. And so it's more of a problem of the brain than of the tissue in the body. And it's easy to learn something. It's harder to unlearn something, unfortunately. Yes. But that's just a little piece of the science. What intrigues me even more is a book that I read years and years ago. It's called The Biology of Belief by Bruce Lipton. And he explains that what you believe, what you perceive as to be true, affects your biology. And I could talk about that for hours, or you could just go to the library in the book, but that really changed my whole perspective of everything to do with me as a physiotherapist, but also me as a person who was going through difficult times. And it's really helped me. It changed my life. It turned everything around for me, knowing that, you know what, if I believe that I'm a depressed person, because I was suffering from depression for a while as well, and I believed, oh, well, if they say that this is what I have, then okay, I'll take the medication. After I read that book, and there were a lot of other things going on, I realized one morning, I don't know why, I woke up and said, this is not who I am. No, this is not who I am. I am this person who wanted to come to Canada and realize this dream. And now I'm here. I love being here. I love being outside. I love going out and meeting people. This is not who I am. So I did these things that I said earlier before. I started walking. I started thinking about, maybe I want to train. Maybe I'll start running. And then I thought, maybe I want to train for 5 kilometers. So I started kind of putting little goals. I mean, it took a long time. It wasn't just over a couple months, but over a couple years. And I actually went to Vancouver to run the Sun Run. And I learned new things. I decided I wanted to learn everything I wanted to learn about nutrition. So I did an online course on nutrition. And then I decided I want to move back to Kamloops. And I went back to Kamloops. I want to start my own practice. I'd always said, I'll never have my own practice. But that's what I did. And I was a different person. And I thought, wow, you know, I just decided that this is not who I wanted to be. And this is not who I am. And then later, I learned from all kinds of other courses and books what I did to do that. So it's very interesting that we think that once we have something, we believe, oh, well, now I'm doomed. I've got it's genetic, or whatever we think is the case with disease, especially, but also with money issues. If you think I'm never going to have enough money, you're basically creating that. And that's your reality. And if you're labeled and diagnosed with a mental health issue, it's very difficult, because you take that on and you believe that. Then you start creating your reality as a person with mental health. And I know it's much more complicated than just saying, well, that's not who I am. That worked for me, because my depression had a cause that was because I had a few major losses in my life that made me really sad. And it kind of evolved into a depression. But it makes you think that whatever you take on, whatever you believe, your body responds what your mind is telling it. So you will feel the way you think, and then you start acting that way because you make different decisions. If you believe if you're going to go out and you're going to have an anxiety attack, your mind is going to protect you and say, do not go outside. It's not safe. Rationally, you can think, nothing's going to happen, but your mind is trying to keep you safe. So your world could become smaller and smaller and smaller because the well-meaning mind wants to keep you safe. And you've decided that for some reason it is dangerous to go out there. And they've discovered the same thing is true when you have chronic pain. Your mind, you've created these things, the dangers and the safe things that you can do. And what is safe and what is dangerous is a decision. And then your mind tells you, well, don't go outside because if you walk, you get more pain. And that's not good. But in fact, moving is good for you. But because your body is not used to the movement anymore, you'll have pain. And then you'll say, oh, well, I did something to my body and I shouldn't be doing that. And that's not true. So if you believe that walking is good for you, even if you do have more pain while you're doing it, it is still good for you because you're not used to it anymore. So there's different cycles and different patterns that form in your mind. But the basis, if I keep it really simple, what you believe, what you tell your mind will go, okay. If you think you're going to get sick, oh God, oh, I was around all these sick people and I feel it right now. I have a sore throat. I'm going to get sick. Your mind hears you. And if you believe you're going to get sick, you'll get sick. I haven't been sick in 9 years, by the way.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I don't get sick. I just don't.
There is so much power in thoughts and words. And I wonder if you're familiar with quantum physicist Eiko Hormann. I had a chance to see her speak, and she was talking about how negative and positive words affected ice crystals. It has the power of destruction or the power of life or order and chaos. So certain words that were negative in the context of creating ice crystals were chaotic in their form, and ice crystals that had words around them that were love or goodness were beautifully creative and symmetrical. The word that we give ourselves is either going to be our best friend or worst enemy.
Yes. Yes.
So you're going to coach people to quit having stinking thinking.
Basically, yeah. Yeah,
that's very good.
Quit the stinky thinking, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not the only one. Many people do that. If you pick up any book of Wayne Dyer, for example, and that's what he talks about all the time, right? There's so many books out there. The thing is, if you read a self-help book, you're like, oh, wow, yeah. Oh, I'm going to practice that. But that's like reading a recipe and expecting that your cake's right there, right? You got to put some action into it. It takes practice. There's an action involved to making that change happen. So just reading about it and absorbing the material and thinking, wow, that's great. You have to actually do something. You know? You have to put the ingredients in the pot, mix it, and put it in the oven and bake it to get the recipe to actually be there, to realize that great cake that you want to make. Mm-hmm. So if you want to improve your life, it is your choice and it is your decision. But then you have to actually do something and do something different.
So speak life into yourself.
Yes. The hardest part is to actually do something different because your mind's telling you, no, 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 we don't do anything different. What's wrong with doing it the old way? Right? Because your mind doesn't like change. Your mind likes, well, I'm talking about the primitive mind, your reptilian brain, the nervous system that kind of puts you in a stress mode, the fight and flight response, right? That's basically the most important thing is to realize that your body's there, your mind wants to protect you. Your nervous system will tell you, whoa, wait a minute, this is unknown. And it will just kind of trigger a little bit of a stress response. Then it's your responsibility to say, yes, I know this is new, but you know what? I want that challenge. And challenge is basically the first step into growth. No challenge, no growth. So if you avoid any challenges because your nervous system is so practiced in staying away from everything that's different or new, then nothing will change.
So where's the battle? Is it between the mind and the spirit or the mind, spirit, the body? Because you're fighting with somebody. You're fighting with yourself, I guess. But where's the battle?
It's not really a fight. It's practiced behavior. If you've learned that staying away from challenges keeps you safe and that's a practiced behavior, then that's what you keep doing. But if you've learned that, you know, it's okay to go out and meet those challenges sometimes because your nervous system will always give you a stress response if there's a perceived danger. And the key word is the perceived danger. And if you have had the experience, for example, as a kid, you petted a dog and it attacked you, you'll believe that dogs are dangerous. And every time you see a dog, that stress response will repeat and you will stay away from dogs. But you can get over that by learning that not all dogs are dangerous. And actually, in fact, most dogs are very friendly. But you need to embrace that new experience. You have to embrace that new belief to be able to get over that fear. So it has to do with practice. Same with public speaking. If you're afraid to be seen and be heard and you feel small because of it, because you've avoided speaking up for yourself, and a lot of women have problems with that, then you will avoid the situations where you get where you're in the spot. And if you keep doing that, you will never experience something different. Then you go, oh, that wasn't so bad. Like me sitting right here, like if you would have asked me this even just 3 years ago, I would have said, no way.
You mean sitting in a chair across from me on a microphone?
Yes. Potentially, you know, being heard by people. I would just have not gone there. Right. So I've challenged myself. This is why I joined Toastmasters, too, is to challenge myself, because I know with my prefrontal cortex can tell me, you know what? It's safe. You're not going to die if I stand in front of people and say something. Even if I make a fool of myself, I'm going to be okay.
You are so encouraging. So as a life coach, how do we get in touch with you so that we can get this coaching?
Oh, yeah. Well, I have a phone number or an email address or a website. That is probably the best way to start a conversation. And I have places on my website where you can ask me questions or just contact me as well.
Do you want to share that with us then?
Yeah, my website is www.ernastassen.com.
Okay.
ErnaStassen.com.
Okay. Yeah. So now we know how to get a hold of you. Yeah. And I hope we get to see you again. I know we're going to see you again because you're going to come and speak to us about Toastmasters, aren't you?
Yeah, I'd love to.
Thanks for joining me today, Erna. What a surprise. You didn't know you were going to do this.
No,
did you?
I wasn't. No. And you know, the thing is, I'd love this because my heart wants to give to the community. This is why I'm doing this. And one of my favorite phrases I tell myself, if I make my desire greater than the fear, I'm going to do it anyway. And that's my advice to everybody is if you really want something, make your desire bigger than your fear and you can make miracles happen.
Wow. Thanks so much for
joining us.
Welcome.
It was fun.
Today.
Thank you.